I intend to live single all the days of my life.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, introducing Pete's E-Cups, letting you send a friend a cup. On the web at Pete's.com. That's P-E-E-T-S.
Do you trust television news? Do you trust? Okay, thanks. Can I ask you a quick question? Yes or no question?
Good morning. This is the KABU Morning News for Wednesday, March 8th, 2006, International Women's Day. I'm Martha Odom.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up on this program, five communities in Vermont endorse resolutions for the impeachment of George Bush. A White House-backed bill to bolster protection of civil liberties under the Anti-Terrorism USA Patriot Act won final congressional approval yesterday from the U.S. House of Representatives. And a study by Human Rights Watch finds rape victims in Mexico are routinely denied access to legal abortions. Portland area weather today calls for rain with temperatures around 50. There is a winter storm warning in effect from 10 a.m. this morning to 6 p.m. Thursday for the South Washington Cascades, the North Oregon Cascades, and the Cascades in Lane County.
The Iditarod is the kind of race that gives even the most extreme athletes pause. Iditarod competitors must have some highly polished non-athletic skills as well, including precise navigational skills and the ability to wrangle and care for an unruly pack of high-energy sled dogs. Rachel Sordis is a 21-year-old, legally blind woman from Bend, Oregon, who plans to return to the race this year after last year's unplanned withdrawal due to sick dogs. Sordis says that this year's effort is going to take care of unfinished business. The grueling race covers over 1,100 miles of frozen Alaskan wilderness. Mushers depart Anchorage on the Pacific coastline and hope to arrive in Nome 9 or 10 days later. In between is some of the harshest, most dangerous, and most beautiful landscape on the planet. Slordis won't be able to see much of it, though. Born with a severe vision problem, she compares her vision to looking at the world through a lens smeared with Vaseline. She credits her father, who raised sled dogs, with allowing her to explore her world and not let the condition limit her experiences. Rachel started 42nd this year and so far has moved up to 16th place. This from KATU.
Tomorrow, councillors at the Metro Regional Government are expected to vote to put a $227.4 million bond measure on November ballots. The proposal would raise property taxes, allowing Metro to buy 5,300 acres of privately owned wildlife habitat from willing sellers, and this from the Oregonian. Metro bought more than 8,000 acres with a similar 1995 bond measure. Supporters say it is the region's best chance to protect land before development gets planned or prices spike. No formal opposition has emerged for the bond measure to be on ballots this year, with other money measures, including renewals of a Portland levy for children's services and a Multnomah County library levy, a new Lake Oswego Community Center, and school spending requests in Portland, Beaverton, and North Clackamas County. Another million residents are expected in the region by 2030, and environmentalists say acquiring new land is one effective way to prevent habitat loss. Last year, a study co-sponsored by the National Wildlife Federation predicted development would pave 11% of the Portland area's remaining open spaces within two decades.
A U.S. soldier who raped a Nigerian woman in Italy was given a lighter sentence because the court deemed his tour of duty in Iraq had made him less sensitive to the suffering of others. According to an Italian court document obtained by Reuters, James Michael Brown, a 27-year-old paratrooper from Oregon stationed in northern Italy, was sentenced to 5 years and 8 months for rape in February of 2004. Brown beat and handcuffed the woman, a Nigerian resident in the town of Vicenza. He raped her vaginally and anally and left her to wander the streets naked in search of help. The crime would have earned him an 8-year sentence, but the judges reduced the penalty due to the extenuating circumstances of the psychological effects of Brown's year of service in Iraq. Basically, the army document said, Brown is just an excitable boy. Brown, who is being held at a U.S. military prison in Mannheim, Germany, may never serve his rape sentence, as under Italian law, he may be allowed to return to the United States, pending an appeal of the conviction.
In 5 Vermont communities, the centuries-old tradition of citizens gathering in town halls to conduct local business became a vehicle to send a message to Washington, impeach the president. In Newfane yesterday, an impeachment article was approved by a paper ballot 121-29 and calls on Vermont's lone member of the U.S. House, Independent Representative Bernie Sanders, to file articles of impeachment against President Bush, alleging he misled the nation into the Iraq War and engaged in illegal domestic spying. At least 4 other Vermont towns, Brookfield, Dummerston, Marlborough, and Putney, spurred by publicity about Newfane's resolution, endorsed similar resolutions at meetings yesterday. Last year, Newfane went on record against the Iraq War. Unfortunately, Representative Sanders issued a statement after the Newfane vote saying that although the Bush administration has been a disaster for our country and a number of actions that he has taken may very well not have been legal, given the reality that the Republicans control the House and the Senate, it would be impractical to talk about impeachment.
According to the Detroit Free Press, General Motors has announced a sweeping change in direction that will place more of the burden on workers to save for their retirement. GM says it must make the changes as part of its efforts to make up for last year's $8.6 billion loss. The changes are the latest to hit to benefits for GM's 42,000 salaried workers who have already been forced to pay more for health care while losing other perks such as tuition reimbursement. Following the lead of many other companies, such as Ford Motor Company, that have cut pensions, GM said that newer employees will see the biggest change. Traditional pension plans lock companies into guaranteed payouts to retirees, even during difficult periods of poor stock market returns or financial distress. But with the 401k program, GM employees will be responsible for managing their retirement investments to ensure the maximum payout when they retire. Edward Wolf, professor of economics at New York University, says that it's a sweet deal for the company, but most workers will wind up worse off as a result of the defined contributions plan. Roughly 90% of the U.S. workforce will shift to a new pension. GM's hourly retirees also have seen changes to their benefits, where union members pay monthly health care contributions, annual deductibles, and co-insurance costs for the first time.
The Senate Committee on Foreign Relations is holding hearings today on the nomination of Randall Tobias to head the U.S. Agency for International Development. Some women's rights and public health groups oppose his nomination because they're worried he will use humanitarian aid as a foreign policy tool. Marcel Hopkins reports.
For the past 3 years, Randall Tobias has served as the head of the federal agency that distributes $15 billion for HIV/AIDS programs. Asia Russell of the AIDS activist group Health Global Action Project says he has not done such a good job.
Tobias has been willing to put ideology ahead of best practice and science when it comes to prevention and treatment.
As an example, Russell cites the Bush administration's abstinence-only policy. It requires HIV educators to promote abstinence until marriage exclusively and prohibits them from promoting condom use. Russell says even though scientific research has shown that condoms can prevent HIV transmission, Tobias argues that they're not effective.
Tobias is not dumb. He knows what the literature and what the data say, and they say something different than the political line that he has often taken at the goading of the Bush administration.
Ellen Marshall, who works with the International Women's Health Coalition, says she's concerned that if Tobias is confirmed as head of USAID, he'll apply a political agenda to all international development programs.
Some of the policies that they've put in place related to HIV might be expanded to a broader set of programs that would come under his leadership at USAID.
But some advocates think Tobias's track record with the government's AIDS programs has proved him to be a good manager. Jove Oliver of the anti-poverty group Results says Tobias made AIDS funding more efficient and effective.
It's been a hard process to do again because you had about five different agencies or six different agencies in the federal government that were working on providing some type of money or some type of assistance for HIV/AIDS. And he has done organizationally a very good job of bringing those five under one roof, kind of, and kind of streamlining what they're doing.
After hearings in the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, the Senate will vote to accept or reject Tobias's nomination to head USAID. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Marcel Hopkins.
Efforts by the White House to hold off legislation challenging Dubai Port Swirl's acquisition of U.S. port operations have stalled. According to the Washington Post, House Republican leaders agreed to allow a vote next week that could kill the deal. Appropriations Committee Chairman Jerry Lewis will attach legislation to block the deal to a must-passed emergency spending bill funding the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. A House vote on the measure next week will set up a direct confrontation with President Bush. The President has vowed to veto any bill delaying or stopping Dubai Port Swirl's purchase of London-based Peninsula and Oriental Steamship Company. White House spokeswoman Dana Perino said last night that the administration is committed to keeping open and sincere lines of communication with Congress. She added, though, that the President's position is unchanged. In a deal brokered by Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, DP World resubmitted its acquisition this week to the administration for a 45-day national security investigation. Frist has said he will hold off any legislation in the Senate until that inquiry is completed. That agreement appears to have quieted calls in the Senate for immediate action against the deal.
Tom DeLay spent Texas primary night at a fundraiser hosted by two Washington lobbyists. DeLay faces three opponents in the Republican primary. For the first time in the 22 years he's held office, he is up against a serious challenge after being forced out of his job as House Majority Leader amid corruption and campaign finance scandals. The fundraiser is being held by lobbyists Bill Paxton and Susan Molinari, both former members of Congress from New York. The event will raise money for DeLay's reelection campaign. DeLay's toughest primary challenger, attorney Tom Campbell, criticized the congressman's election night plans. Campbell said, "I think it's amazingly ironic and callous. He would be spending election night with a group of lobbyists."
A Washington Supreme Court committee voted unanimously this week for rule changes that would remove any doubt about how rarely court files should be sealed statewide. Six of the court's nine justices sit on the committee, so the full court is expected to pass the changes when it meets tomorrow. The justices have been considering amending the rules since last year. Judges and court commissioners in King County Superior Court have improperly sealed hundreds of civil cases. The Seattle Times found 420 that were sealed in their entirety since 1990. The cases include lawsuits alleging that certain drugs and medical devices are unsafe, negligence by particular doctors and dentists, missteps by local and state agencies, and misconduct by publicly traded companies. The state's highest court says court records should be sealed only in rare circumstances. It is written that the public pays for the courts, elects the judges, and is entitled to know what goes on in the courthouse.
Controversy remains high over the threat that the revised Patriot Act poses to civil liberties. Last week, the Senate voted 89-10 to renew expiring portions of the act that included new privacy protections. But aside from civil liberties, the bill is also posing questions over parts that some say have nothing to do with fighting terrorism, including a provision to combat the use of methamphetamines by requiring drugstores to sell certain non-prescription drugs behind the counter. Selena Masuta has more from D.C.
By as early as next month, hundreds of cold, allergy, and sinus medicines containing pseudoephedrine and ephedrine, the main ingredients used to make methamphetamines, may no longer be sold over the counter in the U.S. The U.S. House of Representatives is expected to vote Tuesday afternoon on the reauthorization of the USA Patriot Act, which includes an anti-meth manufacturing measure. Supporters of the provision, like Andrew Kessler of the National Association for Addiction Professionals, see this as an important first step in dealing with what he calls an epidemic.
We believe that by cutting off the supply, it's a good first step. It would make the jobs of the police and the federal agents that go after methamphetamine labs much easier, which they deserve. But the problem won't simply go away because the supply goes away. So as the problem continues, we'd like to see prevention and treatment programs continue to grow, continue to be funded by both the federal government and by state governments and counties and communities around the country.
The bipartisan provision will also require purchasers to show identification and sign a logbook, as well as limit the amount of medicine one consumer can buy. Critics like Doug McVeigh of the Common Sense for Drug Policy say that the anti-meth legislation is a publicity stunt, and the small supply of meth that could possibly cut from the implementation of the legislation will not address the demand.
What really happens in every single state that has imposed restrictions on pseudoephedrine-containing allergy medications, while it is true that they have seen a reduction in the number of labs, that reduction has not been accompanied by a reduction in the level of use. If anything, the use is as high and more dangerous because they're using a more powerful product, ICE, the smokable form.
Other revisions to the Patriot Act include the removal of a provision that required persons to provide the FBI with the name of attorneys consulted regarding a national security letter. The Patriot Act now also provides greater judicial review of gag orders and exempts most libraries from handing over records. The bill is expected to pass in the House. Selena Masuda, FSRN, in Washington, D.C.
A White House-backed bill to bolster protections of civil liberties under the Anti-Terror USA Patriot Act has won final congressional approval from the U.S. House of Representatives. The 280-138 vote followed Senate approval last week of the bill and a related House-passed measure to renew the 2001 Patriot Act, a centerpiece in George Bush's so-called war on terrorism. Bush intends to sign both into law. Most Democrats in the Republican-led House opposed the measure to increase safeguards of civil liberties, charging it was woefully inadequate. Representative Dennis Kucinich said that the legislation, quote, offers only a superficial reform that will have little, if any, impact on safeguarding our civil liberties. But Judicial Committee Chairman James Sensenbrenner, Wisconsin Republican, led the charge to approve the bill and argued that critics of the Patriot Act should back it too.
According to the South African News Service, women remain in the minority when it comes to representation in the media in South Africa. This report of the Global Media Monitoring Project, released in Johannesburg yesterday, says that men dominated in just about all subjects covered by the media. The only topics where women were representative were in articles on sex workers and retired people. When it came to experts contacted for comment, most were also men, with women representing only 5%. While both men and women were commonly portrayed as victims in the news, more women victims were reported than men. Women elected to political positions should not find themselves subject to additional barriers once they are in office. A 50% female representative should not mean that men could sit back in the belief that women were taking care of women's issues. One of the report's authors said, struggle for gender equality is a struggle for the whole country, not just for the women elected.
The debate over gun control in the Second Amendment has never been hotter than it is today. Generally, feminists have taken the anti-gun rights side of the debate. However, the new book, Gun Women, Firearms, and Feminism in Contemporary America, challenges the long-standing feminist viewpoint. Authors Mary Zeiss Stang and Carol K. Oyster combine an in-depth view of the past and present use of firearms by women in America with a heavy dose of feminist ideology based on a naturalistic worldview. Gun Women is a wonderful blend, according to the review in the New York Times, of data and statistics with intriguing stories about real women using guns for a variety of purposes. Gun Women explores women using firearms for self-defense as police officers, as soldiers, as hunters, as cowboy entertainers, as competitive athletes, and just for fun. It also includes 7 biographical snapshots of women detailing how they came to know and use firearms. Stang and Oyster grapple with the question, should women have guns, in the first chapter, providing lots of background information. Stang and Oyster take on anti-gun notions that women are incompetent to use firearms and that by arming themselves they are contributing to a violent society. The rest of the book is devoted to exploring the many reasons women do have guns. Pro-gun women who are not feminists will agree with many of the author's conclusions, but will struggle with the underlying value system and thought processes. The book makes plain the author's view that women are superior to men in a number of areas relating to the use of firearms. While the authors did praise men occasionally, men were, for the most part, presented as unenlightened, immature, and domineering. Additionally, pregnancy and child rearing were generally presented negatively as a barrier to equality with men.
The daughter of the former Prime Minister of Malaysia has launched a scathing attack on the roles and status of Muslim women in the country. Marina Mahathir is a prominent campaigner for women's rights and has compared the lot of women to that of black South Africans under apartheid, describing Muslim women as second-class citizens who are held back by discrimination. Mahathir wrote the comments for her regular newspaper column due to be published in yesterday's newspaper, but they did not appear. Her comments appear to have been prompted by recent changes to Malaysia's Islamic family law that makes it easier for Muslim men to take multiple wives, to divorce them, and to take a share of their property. The women's ministry encouraged female lawmakers to vote for the measure, saying they could be amended later, prompting widespread criticism and leading some to suggest the ministry be split in two, one to help non-Muslim women fight discrimination and the other to keep Muslim women bound and gagged.
A new study by Human Rights Watch finds that rape victims in Mexico are routinely denied access to legal abortion, according to the BBC. Official figures reveal more than 120,000 women are raped in Mexico each year, but the real figure could be much higher. Human Rights Watch interviewed over 100 doctors, lawyers, officials, and rape victims, and found that many of the women are intimidated by officials into having backroom abortions or going through with the pregnancies unwillingly. Abortion is illegal in Mexico unless the woman concerned was raped, but according to the report, many women are still denied safe abortions even if their pregnancy was a result of this crime. Pregnant rape victims are intimidated, insulted, and threatened. In some cases, public prosecutors have told rape victims that having an abortion would kill them. Kenneth Roth, executive director of Human Rights Watch, says that rape victims may feel reluctant to approach prosecutors for fear of being humiliated or thought to be reporting a rape in order to get an abortion. He added that humiliation drives over 90% of women away from ever even reporting their rape. And as a result, without reporting the rape, they're not entitled to an abortion.
Senate Republicans yesterday agreed to expand oversight of President George Bush's domestic spying program, but rejected Democrats' pressure for a broad inquiry into eavesdropping on U.S. citizens. Senator Pat Roberts, Republican chair of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, said the committee voted to create a new 7-member subcommittee that would scrutinize the eavesdropping under a plan approved by the White House. The Bush administration was criticized by rights groups, Democrats, some Republicans for the surveillance program. In addition, the White House has begun discussions with several Republican lawmakers on legislative language that could further regulate the program. Four Senate Republicans, all critics of the program, proposed a plan that would authorize the National Security Agent to eavesdrop without a warrant for 45 days, but require the White House to justify every decision to continue beyond that time frame. Senators voting no included Oregon's own Ron Wyden. The legislative proposal, titled the Terrorist Surveillance Act of 2006, also would force the eavesdropping program to cease after 5 years unless renewed by Congress. But Republican-controlled intelligence panel voted down a Democrat proposal for complete investigation into the surveillance by the National Security Agent by the full 15-member Intelligence Committee, this according to Reuters.
The Afghan government says it will reserve 30% of seats on all public buses for women. Women who suffered discrimination under the ousted Taliban regime are often left at stops by bus drivers. The United Nations Development Fund for Women has produced literature to promote positive attitudes towards women passengers and stickers for buses to indicate where women should sit. The program is in line with the Afghan Compact, a blueprint for international engagement in the development of Afghanistan over the next 5 years.
Traffic police across Russia today will give a free pass to women drivers who commit minor traffic violations in honor of International Women's Day. Deputy Interior Minister Alexander Chekalin said traffic policemen will not darken the holiday for driverettes. On this spring day, representatives of the fair sex will not be punished for minor traffic violations. Traffic police in some regions already have a tradition of letting women drivers get away with infraction on the March 8th holiday. The deputy minister said in some places they congratulate the women drivers, and in other places they even give them small presents, such as festive postcards with a traffic police insignia or small bouquets of flowers.
Thousands of demonstrators have been marching through Kenya's capital, angry at a police raid on a media group. The Nairobi protesters waved placards demanding that Internal Security Minister John Michuki must go. Last week, hooded policemen seized equipment, halted TV broadcasts, and burned thousands of newspapers belonging to the Standard Media Group. The operation has been described as the biggest media crackdown seen in Kenya since independence. The raid followed a story published by the media group that said the president had secretly met a leading opponent. The internal security minister said the raids were designed to protect state security. The Standard, Kenya's oldest newspaper, has been critical of President Kibaki's handling of recent corruption scandals. The government has repeatedly accused the newspaper of fabricating stories. The paper has threatened to sue the government over the raids. Three Standard journalists arrested before the raids over a story about President Kibaki have been charged with publishing alarming statements and released on bail.
About 2,000 men marched in Bangladesh's capital yesterday, a day before International Women's Day, to protest against acid attacks that permanently disfigure many women each year. The protesters, including celebrities, teachers, and students, carried placards and banners reading "Stop Acid Violence," "Respect Women's Rights," and "Throwing Acid is a Heinous Crime." Dozens of female acid victims accompanied the marcher. A total of 268 people, mostly women, were attacked with acid last year in Bangladesh, according to the Acid Survivors Foundation, which sponsored the rally. The spokeswoman for the foundation said, "We believe without men's active participation, we will not be able to eliminate such heinous crimes." Most victims are women assaulted by spurned lovers, but recently more men and children are being splashed with painful flesh-burning sulfuric acid in family arguments or disputes over property. The number of acid attacks has declined in the past few years, but they are still a serious threat to women, who comprise 75% of the victims.